Was Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. And it's now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. Once again, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
Thank you for listening to Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, did you bomb for the best, expect the worst. Understood, but did you know?
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. You're joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm over here, present.
And over in Skype land, we have Gila.
Good evening.
We have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening.
Wow, that went off without a hitch. How about that? Happens occasionally. Welcome, everybody. This programming note, we are not on next week. So if you were planning a gathering next week by the radio, you'll have to do something else because we won't be part of it. And that goes for Overtime as well. Overtime follows this show on YouTube. You have to switch to a different device and listen to us over there. But the plus side of that is that you can call us during that show. Not during this show because we're not in the actual studio, but during that show, we have made allowances for that. And while talking about radio, let's all support WBAI, huh? Let's keep this station on the air and strong and filled with controversy and alternative opinions and thoughts and news and everything. Call 212-209-2950 or go to the website give2wbai.org. That's give, the number 2, wbai.org. And pledge as generously as you can possibly imagine. And voices like ours will continue to broadcast over the airwaves for decades to come, hopefully. All right. Since we're not on next week, I also have to remind people about something. It's kind of a conundrum here because we haven't announced it yet. But the problem is we're not on next week, so we can't announce it next week. And the week after that, when we're back, it's too late. I'm referring, of course, to the deadline for people to submit their talk proposals for the HOPE conference coming up this summer. The deadline will be the 31st of May. So 2 weeks from today is the 1st of June, so you'd be out of luck. So doing you a favor by letting you know something that nobody else knows yet, that the deadline will be May the 31st for your talk submissions, panel submissions. If you have an idea for something that that you want to talk about in front of a bunch of hackers, or if you have a panel discussion or just something of interest, this is your opportunity. HOPE.net is where you can find all the information as to how to submit it, where to email. Well, I can tell you the email address, speakers@hope.net. But as far as guidelines on how to shape your talk and the kinds of things we're looking for, that's all findable on the website hope.net. Hope, of course, standing for Hackers on Planet Earth, and happening July 22nd through the 24th. And a bunch of us have been going through a lot of speaker submissions. It's pretty impressive all over the world. We have in person, this is our first in-person conference in 4 years, but we also have virtual talks. So if you have an idea for a talk, but there's no way you can make it to New York this summer, well, we have a provision for you as well. And the same thing holds true for attendees. We have a virtual side to the conference, even though the conference is going to be mostly in person at St. John's University. So I think that covers everything. Did I leave anything out, folks?
Just that we're really, really excited to see what you have to propose. And also, we say this every time, but we hear this every time. Every time we've done a Hope conference, after the deadline, we have people contacting us going, is it too late? Is it too late? I was thinking of submitting something. Submit something now before it's too late.
Yeah, because we're getting back to the people that did that last time. Right now, we're getting. If you did that 2 years ago, we're getting back to you now. So that's what happens when you miss a deadline.
Absolutely. So go to hope.net for all the info, for the info on travel to the conference, and you know what to do when you're in town, and how to submit, and what sort of things that you might like to see there. If you want to send feedback, you can do all that through hope.net.
Okay, I trust we've made our point. All right, then. Now, getting to the news, this is kind of perplexing and puzzling concerning Twitter and Elon Musk. Yeah. apparently he's having cold feet or second thoughts or something like that. The Twitter board yesterday said that it plans, and this is a quote, to close the transaction and enforce the merger agreement between Elon Musk and Twitter. The board and Mr. Musk agreed to a transaction at $54.20 per share, Twitter's board said in a statement to the New York Times. We believe this agreement is in the best interest of all shareholders. We intend to close the transaction and enforce the merger agreement. Yeah, it must be something when you're told that you have to cough up $44 billion.
I've been following this, and my curiosity out of some of the changes and developments is the point of buying or purchasing this entity was that these changes and looking into some of these concerns would be part of taking ownership as a new owner and changing the direction of the company. Now it seems like the details around that are contingent on the sale. Like it has to be fixed or running a certain way before the new owner steps in and does anything. But it was made out to be like the first priority once they took over and had the ability to control and be involved. Does that jive with it? Does anybody else hear that in this reporting?
I don't know. I was just thinking about all this talk about the Twitter board, and I'm assuming that's spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Yes, Rob, that's correct. Well, you know, the tweet from Elon Musk, everything, by the way, is being done by tweet. Not allowed to speak in person until this deal goes through. My offer was based on Twitter's SEC filings being accurate. Yesterday, Twitter's CEO publicly refused to show proof of less than signed 5%. This deal cannot move forward until he does. What that means is what he's looking for is evidence that less than 5% of Twitter's accounts are fake. I don't know how they can prove an account is fake or an account is real. That's sort of the whole problem. That's sort of what we've been going through with the hell that Twitter has been over the past few years. And now what Musk is saying is that the deal can't go through if a certain percentage of users aren't real users.
Yeah, this kind of goes to the boosting numbers thing I was talking about a couple weeks ago, and I'm just really perplexed. Like, I thought they were the only people that could save us from all the fake accounts, and that all that had to happen was they had to take ownership, and they would be the sort of white knight to solve democracy and discourse online.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like they're wanting it to be served up on a sort of platter before they do anything.
You're saying they. You mean Elon Musk, or do you mean the Twitter board?
Well, I assume he's not going to be doing it all by himself.
Right.
So I'm presuming whatever entity he forms and brings in on his white horse or whatever.
What I don't get is, isn't Twitter, no matter how many users are fake or real? I mean, he knew what he was getting into when he made the offer. So I don't see how, if it's 5% or 6% or 10% fake users, 50%, you know, it's still the same animal. It's still, you know, that is what you are buying, that kind of influence and whatever it is that you think the Twitter represents. I think maybe Elon Musk is realizing how naive he actually is. Yes, go ahead, Gila.
I think he is. And there's also a certain amount of brinksmanship that's at play here. And I just was reading a book. I was on jury duty yesterday, and while I was sitting in the jury room, I was reading a novel. It was great. And the novel I was reading concerned two young people who were getting married, and neither of them really wanted to get married, and they just kept expecting their parents or grandparents or someone to say, oh my God, you're making a rash decision and you need to stop. And I think Elon Musk is waiting for the Twitter board to say that. Because, again, like I said last week, midlife crisis, he's sad post-breakup, so he's, you know, he can't go buy a sports car, so he's doing this. And he's waiting for them to say, no, stop, this is a bad idea, you don't know what you're doing. And they're like, no, totally, you're going to do this, you said you were going to do this, and now you have to. This is brinksmanship in simultaneously a very huge and very insignificant kind of situation. And I see the two items fighting against each other, and this is not going to end well for anyone.
Well, the problem is, you know, he showed them the money and they want the money. And I don't think they're going to back down now. And this might get very spectacular with how he's trying to prove that he's unfit to buy the company, but I don't think they're going to be interested in that. I think they just want the payment. Yes, Alex.
I mean, I think part of this, too, relates to the naivete that might have been present when he made the offer. But now that he's thinking about it a bit more, I think he might be blaming the bogus accounts on his reluctance. But I think it might have something to do a bit more with coming to the realization that this notion of free speech absolutism that he had been espousing for Twitter, you know, reverting back to the days of old, before there were community standards for Twitter, before Donald Trump was banned, reinstating banned accounts for people like Donald Trump, that this would be an absolute dumpster fire to revert to. And this whole idea of, you know, the First Amendment being the most important thing in the world, it's all well and good if we're talking about the United States of America. But Twitter, as we all know, is not an American platform. It's a global platform. And the notion of the First Amendment does not necessarily apply to places like Indonesia or the Philippines or Turkey. And so if he plans to have this reversion to local laws and to, you know, uphold the law, whatever the law of the land is with regard to free speech, and not have community standards for the globe, as Twitter currently does, then he's going to be supporting certain types of censorship and supporting certain types of suppression. And so there's really no easy way out here to deal with the issue of content moderation. You either have a reversion to an absolute dumpster fire. I forgot we're on FCC regulated for the moment.
Yes.
So I need to,
yeah,
to
on Twitter.
You know, censor myself in my adjectives and nouns here. But I think, so, you know, he's really caught between a rock and a hard place is one way of putting it. And that's why I think he may be having some cold feet.
I would also add that Twitter needs those markets. A lot of these transnational, like global companies, they absolutely want those customers. They have trouble enough figuring out how to monetize these platforms, having started at the outset offering a free service in exchange for ad revenue. So this expansion is important to them. So they'll be in a compelled, I think, in many ways, upon entrance into or continuation of activities in those markets to do their do the most that those local governments want, especially if this is the overall attitude of the company.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, Elon maybe should go for a nice BBS or something. You know, if you want to do a free speech experiment and just see what happens, you know, start small and get good at it. But this was a bad idea from the start. We all said that. And I don't know how it's going to end now. It'll end in fire, no doubt, but it's not going to be pretty. And this, I'm just finding out about, somehow Elon Musk got onto our timeline at 2600. How did that happen? There's a tweet from him on our timeline. We don't follow him, but somehow he says, and he used the word you can't use on the radio, but he put a star in the middle of it. The word BS baffles brains. That's the statement of the day, apparently. But it showed up on our timeline. Okay, you know, an investigation has to be launched now as to how he hijacked our timeline. We don't follow him. So he shouldn't be there. And it doesn't say promoted, so I don't get it. Did he hack the system? Is that what's going on here? Have we been hacked by Elon Musk? Wow.
We'll report it. We will.
Who? Who's going to listen?
To him.
We're trying to get verified by him. Nothing works. Oh, boy.
That's the statement of the year. Nothing works. So what else do we have that doesn't work?
Certainly our country at the moment isn't working very well as far as safety, as far as hatred, all these things. Hatred's in great supply. Safety's in short supply. Referring to the terrorist act in Buffalo, it cost 10 people their lives. At the hands of a white supremacist with access to weaponry. And now we're looking at a situation, and this will be interesting to look at, where Governor Hochul is proposing a series of measures to combat domestic terrorism. Her plan is to strengthen what's known as the Red Flag Law. That's meant to bar certain individuals from owning or possessing weapons, which sounds great to me. Creating a new Homeland Security unit to track extremism online. Well, I'm never a big fan of Homeland Security anything because it just sounds so Orwellian. But extremism online is definitely an issue. And here's the interesting one. Investigate the online platforms that broadcast the massacre and sites where the Buffalo shooter posted racist writings before the attack. Now, it said that these are sites like Twitch, Discord, 4chan, all very different from each other, but all played a part in this as far as the shooter had access to them and was actually able to broadcast part of what he was doing and discuss in advance what he was doing. This is what the Attorney General, Letitia James, said. The fact that an individual can post detailed plans to commit such an act of hate without consequence and then stream it for the world to see is bone-chilling and unfathomable. As we continue to mourn and honor the lives that were stolen, we are taking serious action to investigate these companies for their roles in this attack. Time and time again, we have seen the real-world devastation that is born of these dangerous and hateful platforms, and we are doing everything in our power to shine a spotlight on this alarming behavior and take action to ensure it never happens again. I'm not sure the platforms themselves are dangerous and hateful. I'm not sure that's really a fair way to characterize them, but they certainly were used for dangerous and hateful purposes. I think that's what needs to be looked at. I'm a little wary of attacking the technology or the platforms that are using the technology as the threat. I think they are not being used properly. They're being abused, certainly, and we need to figure this out. But this cannot turn into a political issue or an issue of speech, because I cannot imagine having a debate about speech where someone is saying, yes, someone should have the right to broadcast a massacre as he guns down innocent people. We can all agree that that is something reprehensible that has to be stopped and prevented. The question is, how do we have that conversation? Alex, looks like you want to start that conversation.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, I think it goes back to the conversation that we tried to end about Twitter and Elon Musk, because what you're driving at, in my opinion, is the fact that we do need some kind of community standards and some sort of universal mores or ethics about what's right and what's wrong. And it's not very hard for us to figure that out with these sorts of extreme examples. It's almost like a universal principle of natural law or something, you know, and in every community, in every nation, society, et cetera, it's always bad to murder somebody. In the same way, it's always bad to broadcast the murder of somebody. I mean, it's absolutely horrific. And it goes back to this issue of the dumpster fire that Twitter would become if there were no rules, or there were no rules on any of these other platforms. And the fact that this guy, the shooter, I won't even mention his name, was radicalized by going to places like 4chan and 8chan and these unregulated boards should tell us something about the dangers of unregulated speech and activity, you know, when it comes to hate speech and things like that. Because if we do have these community standards and they are enforced, that prevents the spillover of digital violence to physical violence and prevents the radicalization of people going into a mosque, let's say, in New Zealand and killing Muslims, or going into a supermarket in Buffalo and killing people. But I wanted to go back to the second point here, which is tracking extremism online. And as I've mentioned before, I'm a founding board member of the Technology Advisory Board for Human Rights First. And one of the things that I've been doing with Human Rights First is repurposing the DNS, or the domain name system intelligence platform, that I created over the last several years to track extremism online in the global domain name system. And I'll tell you, yesterday, there were two domain names that were registered that jumped out to me today as being highly dangerous and really nasty. And one of them was whitepowerworldwide.com. And the other was in a new GTLD, or a new generic top-level domain, .world. It was whitepower.world. Both of these were registered by the same exact person at 2223 Zulu on the 17th of May. And what was really interesting about these two domains is if you navigate to whitepowerworldwide.com, what do you think you get?
Well, I mean, since it was just registered yesterday, I imagine they probably haven't had time to set up a nice looking website. Probably just something saying under construction, check back soon, something like
that. Well, you know, you would be wrong, because whoever registered those domain names redirected them to the NAACP.
Okay, that's interesting.
Which I thought was great. And when you further investigate these domains, whitepowerworldwide.com, these were previously registered. Mm-hmm. They existed, and they had expired. So whoever snatched these up yesterday did a public service by snatching them up before some kind of extremist could repurpose them. And now they're redirecting all the traffic that used to go there to the NAACP. So whoever did that, kudos to them.
But when you described it at the beginning, you said it leaped out at you as dangerous. And I think what you're demonstrating here is how we cannot trust our instincts as
right.
What is dangerous and what is not. Something that appears to be evil actually could be an act of good. I just wonder, you know, somebody who actually goes to that website and winds up at the NAACP, you know, what kind of mood are they going to be in at that point? And what will be their next step? That worries me a little bit.
Who knows? But I think it's a great methodology to look for these expired domain names, because you're also, you know, you're in charge of the traffic. Then you also could be in charge of whatever email addresses existed at that particular domain name as well.
Well, then you're launching a whole new career for yourself, tracking down white supremacists. I don't know if everybody is suited for that. But wow, that's interesting. How do you find a domain that's about to expire, though? And how do you get it? Because every time I've seen something like that happen, it's in the hands of a squatter, it's in the hands of a company, and either you pay $10,000 for it or some other machine gets it.
Yeah, there are these like domain snap services and things where you can put in there's monitoring services so that when a domain goes back into general registration, when the public can re-register it, it'll snap it back up. That's one service that you can use. Another is really just to be vigilant and watch these types of things and take note of, you know, the date on which a domain is going to expire. Then there's going to be some kind of grace period. After that grace period expires, then the domain will go back into the general public. And things like White Power Worldwide, they might not be on anybody's waiting list. Let's hope not.
I just want to add, the technical solutions we're mentioning are worthwhile and important. And, in addition to that, I think like the measures that Governor Hochul was talking about, some of the initiatives Whatever, however big or small, if it's a gun buybacks, if it's more education, even I'll say mental health, of course. Yes, we all need more mental health care in this country. It seems every day we need it more and more. So, you know, all of those different levels, I think, are aspects of this because it is a truly chaotic but pattern, you know, a systemic pattern we're noticing in generations of a particular type of person. And we really, I think, need to have a deep reckoning about identity, cultural identity, and race relations needs to continue to be something that, you know, we open up and discuss. If I don't know what it's going to take. I don't think we have any one answer. These technical things are a start. The only thing I'm hearing that's dangerous in some of the comments about these platforms is that thing of slipping into all of the activities on Telegram or on, end-to-end or otherwise invisible platforms. So at least on these other ones, they're easier to spot, easier to maybe toy with a little bit, throw them some honeypots, some fun places to go loiter, or other things. Maybe challenging some of the conversation that goes on there, or I don't know. I mean, I think we're all asking and trying to find out ways to deal with this kind of stuff. My point is just it's going to take a whole lot of everything we can think of.
Well, mastery of these platforms is key. And I think, you know, if we basically suspect a platform of being evil from the start, I remember TikTok a couple of years ago, how suspicious everybody was. Now everybody uses TikTok constantly. Maybe they were right. But the point is, it's not the platform. It's what people do with it. And if you have people on the platform who are good people, they're the ones that can make the platform adjust itself so that these kinds of things aren't as easy to happen as we're seeing right now. What the Attorney General is saying, the investigations will focus on those platforms that may have been used to stream, promote, or plan the event, including but not limited to Amazon. Yeah, I said it that way because, you know, if you say Twitch, people don't always know that Twitch is owned by Amazon.
But that could be host machines on their cloud services as well as the Twitch platform.
4chan, 8chan, Discord, all these platforms. It's important that we understand how they work. We know what we want out of them. You know, I think there are things, regardless of whether or not you agree with people on many different items, there are things that I think many of us, most of us, hopefully all of us can agree on. That's that shouldn't be guns in the hands of people who are going to do things like this or who are likely to do things like this. These platforms should not be used to promote such horrible events. And, take it from there.
Yeah, using the platforms, I think there are already parallel laws related to, different types of equipment mm-hmm. that, if you use it in commission of a crime, like lockpicking sets or body armor, it is illegal. But in not using, using it normally, using it for a legitimate purpose, more or less, or less a non-hateful purpose, shall we say, in this case, then okay, you can stream and do as you like. But I would be very surprised if this wasn't something that would escalate some kind of charge because it was used in the commission of a crime, just like any of these kind of equipment things I was talking about.
But you know, it goes further and it gets a bit more debatable when you start looking at inspirations for people to become radicalized. I'm looking at Fox News. I'm looking at replacement theory that Tucker Carlson's been pushing, probably pushing at this very moment. What do you do about that? How do you counter this besides making people aware of it? And it's tough. It really is tough. The small thing that I'm doing right now is if I see Fox News playing in an establishment, I'm walking out of that establishment. And I think everybody can do that. You know, no confrontation, nothing like that. But you don't have to support it, and you do support it if you treat it like this is okay. And I would go so far as to say if I have an appointment at a doctor or a dentist and they're playing Fox News, I'm going to get a different doctor or dentist, and I'm going to let them know that. A couple of other things you can do. Everybody has the same cable remote. If you're going into a place locally, odds are they're using the same system that you have. Bring your remote with you. It's going to work. You can even block that channel. It's a way of doing that. I've never done it, but you can actually go into an establishment and with a couple of keystrokes, this puts TV Beyond to shame. You can make it so they can't even watch that channel. Where's my freedom of speech? But you know what? Sometimes you just got to act.
Is that with the parental controls? Like you can set a password?
Yeah, you can set a password. I'm sure, you know, you can get the password since, you know, but the thing is, they're just going to assume it's broken. They're not going to know what you did. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of clever ways you can fight back. Not always, you know, 100% the right thing to do, but boy, it'll make you feel better.
Yeah, absolutely. And holding media corporations to better standards, having less consolidation in media, generally speaking, would be better. But, a lot less of the illegitimate kinds of smaller news outlets, because if you turn your back on larger media organizations that have credibility, that employ journalists that really care about getting their craft right, that, you know, make corrections when they have to, that kind of true reporting. You turn your back on that, you're going to get a lot of those clickbait news sites, and you're going to get the media you deserve, and as a result, you'll get the country that you deserve. And some people are totally satisfied with that. I'm not, and I know there are a lot of other people that are not. So it's the kind of thing where scrutiny for the types of media that we're consuming, and like you mentioned, that cable channel needs to be referred to as what it is, which is mostly commentary. It's not reporting. And
no, it's not news.
It's not the same thing. There's certainly, you know, CNN. There's other channels that have their failings, but some of these things don't compare as far as replacement theory and these kinds of insidious conspiracies and really ideologically backwards and contrary to American ideals and values. Mm-hmm. But it's being masqueraded as something legitimate, which it's not. And it shouldn't be made to be.
Yeah, so. The thing is, you know, that the horse has left the barn, and we need to figure out how to coax it back and get back to somewhat of a civilized society. We're very far away from that right now, and the more we have these naive views of what's fair and what's free, it's going to get worse, because, you know, everyone has their opinion on everything from vaccines to elections to whether or not somebody has rights equal to you. It's madness. And it's definitely getting worse in many places. Doesn't really make a difference who's in power at the moment. It's the mood of the nation right now. And right now, you know, on the cusp of Roe versus Wade being overturned, gay and trans people having laws against their existence being passed everywhere. It's a scary time, and it's going to continue to be scary unless we fight back, and we have to figure out all different kinds of ways of fighting back and standing by each other. That's very important, because if we attack each other while we're doing this, then it's pointless. We won't accomplish anything. All right. On a different note, there is a UFO hearing in Congress. You saw this, Kyle?
Yes.
What's going on? Is there something I need to know about?
Well, there are representatives from various parts of the government, specifically naval intelligence, uh-huh, and some of the other, the leads of this UAP task group or committee or whatever. They're basically investigating and creating a process for reporting UAPs. They're formalizing that process.
What's
they talked
a UAP?
A lot about it is the new term they're using for UFO, and you know what a UFO is.
Why can't we say UFO? We have to say UAP now? This political correctness is too much.
Yeah, I think that term allowed for sort of broader sets of scenarios, and they're looking at all of them to kind of create a database and find patterns.
Okay, wait, UAP. Unidentified. I'm going to say it's unidentified. Rob, looks like you have a guess for the second word, unless you already know.
I do already know.
Well, then you can't guess, can you? That's not fair. Alex, you guess.
All right, I'll set this out.
I can't. I'm at a loss.
Think of a single word beginning with A.
Acrobats.
Okay, good guess. Gila, do you know the answer?
I do because I can see it. It's up on Rob's screen, so I'm going to recuse myself from asking.
All right, so I got to guess now. Unidentified. Yeah, it is hard to think of a word beginning with.
This isn't the whole story. It's just something we're focusing on here.
No, but what could begin with A? It's a flying object. Alien. Yeah, unidentified alien something. No alien? They don't like to use the word alien?
For the sake of this conversation, yeah, that's...
Maybe the eighth time I say alien, it'll be right.
It's not alien.
Alien? No? But, okay, let's tell us what it is.
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. Unidentified flying objects made a lot of sense. Unidentified aerial phenomena. Okay, whatever.
What is in a name? Who cares about the name?
Well, apparently they do.
It's
they
like
renamed
the most
it.
Exciting, interesting, fascinating thing. And yet again, you got a problem with the way they're labeling it. You can call it.
Hey, they are the ones who changed it. I didn't. So anyway,
unidentified aerial popcorn. You know, just make up a name for it.
Well, apparently that's what they did. So okay,
it's not the most important part.
What was the most important part?
I think the most important part is that they are organizing. They're creating a system. They're working with civilian as well as their own pilots so that they'll actively report things. And they talked about, well, not much, because a lot of it ended up being, not as satisfying as far as answers you would
want.
What
kind of witnesses did they have? And you say civilians as well as military.
Well, it was a little comical. They played a video, and then the player they were playing the video couldn't advance frame by frame, so they had to get some help to show a frame, because every time they played the video, the flying object would fly past the screen. They couldn't, you couldn't see it, so they would, like, try to advance the video, and it would skip past wherever this object was. So you had, like, 10 minutes of trying to show this proof that showed nothing, so...
These are the people telling us about UAP, right? Unidentified, yeah. And they can't even play it back with the technology they have. How are they supposed to explain technology we don't understand yet?
It's more Congress that was having trouble displaying their exhibits. But they did bring stuff. They showed scenarios where they could explain what you were seeing and why it was happening. They had other, like the one I was talking about, where... They eventually got it on this frame, and it is an object that they cannot explain. And there were other instances where they talked about situations that had been reported that had other data, but they couldn't talk about where and what kind of data that was. So you get the sense that there are things they don't know about. There are things that they have pretty good certainty that it is man-made or has an explanation, like scientifically or otherwise. But then amidst all the different categories, they talked about the other category where it's just like, we have not enough information. We don't really know where or what it is, or we can't explain how it came to be in the evidence we have. So their whole presentation was basically about the kind of spectrum of things that they're looking at and looking into for all the reporting that that's being channeled to them. But they're really trying to formalize this thing instead of it being relegated to crackpot theories and wild conspiracies.
And who is they? Is it a particular committee of Congress?
I don't have the exact details in front of me about who and how it's working, but maybe someone with information services near them can elaborate for me.
Doesn't appear so. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I can certainly try. Let's see. This was a panel that held this hearing, and it was I can explain why it's unidentified aerial phenomena now, because that covers a lot more ground than unidentified flying object. Something might not be an object. It might be a trick of the light, or you know, something of that nature. So this basically opens it up to, it's up in the sky and we don't know what it is.
Okay, but then when you start to learn what it is, couldn't it then become a UFO? Because then it's a flying object, not a you know, reflection of light.
But if you've identified it, it's no longer unidentified. It's just a plane or some swamp gas or, you know, a spaceship or whatever. But it is not identified.
Yeah,
it is not unidentified.
Of course,
anymore.
If it's identified, it's not a UFO. But I'm saying if it's not identified, it still could be a UFO, and that kind of narrows it down. I don't really care what they call it, but
I saw some of this hearing, and it was disappointingly boring. But there was not one single inquiry into the whereabouts of Fox Mulder's sister. So I had to switch it.
Wasn't
off.
There a period where somebody was being asked what kind of science fiction conventions he went to?
Yes.
What was that all about?
One of the leads of this task force or this panel that was being questioned is a former intelligence officer. I don't know if he was the guy from Naval Intelligence. I think he was from Naval Intelligence, spent his career doing that, and then he talked a little bit about his fascination with this topic and how he grew up during the space race and alongside the actual factual accomplishments, moon conspiracies aside, but alongside the leaps and bounds that were being made in aerospace and exploration in the 60s was this incredible compendium of media from the 60s, the 70s on. You have tons and tons of media and science fiction stuff. So he admitted having an interest and said he didn't he went to conventions but wouldn't go so far as to say that he dressed up entirely, and then was prodded a little bit about entirely not participating. Like perhaps maybe he has donned some costume for one of those. But that, I think, he explained is part of his character, and I thought that was a really good explanation too. That yeah, the people involved in this are people too. They do have a sense of humor. They do have fascinations with, you know, fantasy and stuff that is not true. And I think for like my passion and interest in this, that's so crucial. Mm-hmm. You've got to have an imagination for this. You're investigating things that we don't understand. We may not have the capacity to understand the phenomena or the technology. You must have an imagination and appreciation for the unknown and the mysterious and the things you don't even know you can think of yet.
Yeah.
No, so I was impressed by that, and I thought that just lent to their credibility. But
go ahead, Alex.
I mean, I'm I think aligned with Rob here in that I remember this UAP thing being addressed in Congress last year, and leave it to Congress to take one of the most esoteric, fascinating phenomenon of the 20th and century and 21st century, and to just, you know, make it into an incredibly dull and boring hearing here. I mean, I would have preferred to see, you know, the person testifying dressed up as like, you know, as one of the Greys, or, you know, really, frankly, just wake me up when they confirm that the Greys exist, that they're here on Earth and they're testifying in front of Congress. Other than that, I feel like I'm done with this.
Well, I would propose that this is by design, Alex. They want it to be boring. It needs to be dry. There needs to be parts of this that people accept and don't really think of anymore. Because there are elements of this that are related to defense and that do have implications for near peer competition and sorts of leaps and bounds in technological and other sorts of technologies that could be a threat to national security. So the dryness, I mean, if you're not a C-SPAN veteran and you can't read between what's being said in a testimony, spend some more time listening to the dryness. But when you listen to that kind of stuff, you got to read into it. You got to think of the person that's testifying. I mean, we do this when judges were being, you know, looked at. It's the exact same thing. When mm-hmm. you go and you talk, you're going to have our representatives inquire about why you're there, whatever business you're doing. And there's, even if it is boring and dry, there's so much you can kind of glean. Now this though, I would say you're right. In how brief it was and how little detail there was. And they just basically, as is in the case in many things on conflict intelligence or defense stuff, like they have an additional session that is closed and not public. So you got the sense.
Wait, whoa. On this they had?
Yeah.
They had a closed door session about UFOs or UAPs.
They took a break and then they had a closed session.
No, wait. Yeah, okay. If you're trying to get people to not think there's some kind of a conspiracy going on involving this, that's not the way to do it.
Well, right. But and some of the reporting I read, I think it was a New Yorker comment on it. There's a certain schizophrenia around this topic. Uh-huh. Like we're sort of admitting.
You think? Yeah.
One thing. We're saying, no, we don't know another thing. And they were saying, oh, this is important to national security. It's like, There's a lot of things.
And then you close the doors and trot out the aliens, and we don't ever find out about it.
Yeah, it's going to be disappointing. It's going to be a letdown. But there's more admission here and more interesting stuff going on. And if you're fascinated by this stuff, follow it and write about it, or you know, get involved. Maybe you can help investigate
some. You know who they should have talked to is remember a hacker known as Gary McKinnon over in the UK. He was accused of perpetrating the biggest military computer hack of all time when he broke into 97 U.S. government computers. For a time, they were trying to extradite him. And there was a big fight to imprison him. They wanted to imprison him for up to 60 years. But his extradition was blocked after a 10-year legal battle. He remains a free man. And he had a couple of things to say. He said he did no harm. He was merely looking for evidence that U.S. government was actively covering up UFOs. No doubt he was glued to the TV set yesterday. He told The Sun Online what he found left him gobsmacked as he stumbled across thousands of photos during his cyber sting. Thousands of photos. It's a fact that there are objects we don't understand flying around in our skies. It's also a fact that there are scientific, intelligence, and military departments that study these objects. He claims to have found one particularly striking photograph, an image of a cigar-shaped non-man-made craft captured in a satellite photo. It appears to be a very close-up image of the object in space with strangely shaped domes on all sides. That image was the only one Gary managed to see himself before he lost the connection. Damn, I hate how TV shows play out, but sometimes real life plays out the same way. He said there were thousands more photos, though. Talk to this guy. I'm sure you'll learn a few things and maybe find some interesting pictures. He had a painfully slow 56K dial-up connection. He was only able to get the one image out of the folder before his remote connection cut, and he lost the chance to print the screen. Wow, so frustrating. But things like this, interesting topics and things that we should, in the hacker world, pursue and ask questions.
Yeah, and think as imaginatively as possible. You know, some of these, maybe they're us from the future. You know, who knows? Who knows what this stuff is? And the curious are key to this puzzle.
I'm seeing a story here. Crafty hackers can make a tool to eavesdrop on some 6G wireless signals in as little as 5 minutes using office paper, an inkjet printer, a metallic foil transfer, and a laminator. 6G? Is this a joke? What are we doing here?
Well, 6G is still being defined as far as I'm aware, and it's to be deployed in 2030, so this seems like a conspiracy.
The wireless security hack was discovered by engineering researchers from Rice University and Brown University, which present their findings and demonstrate the attack this week in San Antonio at ACM WISEC 2022. The Association for Computing Machinery's annual conference on security and privacy in wireless and mobile networks. Awareness of a future threat is the first step to counter that threat, said study co-author Edward Knightley, Rice's Schieffer Lindsay Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering. The frequencies that are vulnerable in this attack aren't in use yet, but they are coming, and we need to be prepared. I agree.
The proposal... I think Nokia published it because Nokia is Bell Labs now. I printed out like a year ago. I was going to read it on air because it was so scary if you read kind of just, I mean, people freaked out about 5G and yeah, millimeter waves, different type of energy and radiation and so forth. But like 6G is really where some of the privacy and stuff we've been talking about culminates. Look it up. Check out 6G. That'll make you think differently about 5.
In a few years, we'll be talking about the security holes of 6G. I know it. Tesla's in the news again. Millions of Tesla vehicles are vulnerable to hacking. These reports are coming up after a paper from the NCC group came out exposing Bluetooth low energy. We've conducted the world's first link layer relay attack on Bluetooth low energy, BLE, the standard protocol used for sharing data between devices that has been adopted by companies for proximity authentication to unlock millions of vehicles. Residential smart locks, commercial building access control systems, smartphones, smartwatches, laptops, and more. As they wrote, this is a specific exploit related to BLE. It affects virtually every device that uses the protocol, but the reason Tesla is being singled out is that they demonstrated the vulnerability in Tesla vehicles. They wrote in the report, cars with automotive keyless entry, an attacker can unlock, start, and drive a vehicle. NCC Group has confirmed and disclosed a successful exploit of this for Tesla Models 3 and Y, over 2 million of which have been sold. They're describing a relay attack, which has been a known issue with every car using key fobs. And Tesla has moved to BLE key fobs in 2016. Thefts of Tesla vehicles are quite rare in North America, but in Europe, they have some more sophisticated thieves. Huh. They have more sophisticated thieves in Europe? I didn't know that. I thought this was one thing we were leading in.
Well, they're familiar with European cars.
They'd insult us on every level.
Yeah.
More sophisticated thieves. Wow. That's a smack in the face. They managed a string of Tesla vehicle thefts through relay attacks, and most vehicles haven't been recovered. Wow. In response to those attacks, Tesla started rolling out extra layers of security with an improved cryptography key fob, an optional pin-to-drive feature. These measures can be applied to greatly decrease the chances of your Tesla vehicle being stolen, even with this BLE vulnerability. Wow. I had no idea. And, you know, it makes an old-fashioned key look kind of good now, right?
Yeah, a little bit more effective in some ways, but this is all under the assumption you want to steal a Tesla.
Go ahead, Alex.
I think, you know, this is a really interesting story because this Bluetooth Low Energy Protocol was never really intended to be used for something like access control. It's the classic example of a technology being repurposed for a function for which it was not originally designed. And because it's so ingrained in so many devices, in so many places, you know, not just Teslas, but, you know, being used for access control, locks, you mentioned it, Emmanuel, you know, all over the place. I think like Log4j, which we dealt with last year, you know, this is a vulnerability that's going to be really hard to fix or patch because it's so fundamental to so many different devices around the world. And a lot of those devices may not be updated. They may not be patched. They may be disused. Manufacturers may have gone out of business. So it's going to be a vulnerability that's with us for some time.
All right. Our time is up. We are going to continue the conversation on overtime on YouTube. Just go to channel 2600 on YouTube. It's one word. Or click on the link that's on the top of 2600.com webpage. This final story, though, if you were one of the people watching Eurovision over the weekend, what a great contest that was. A pretty amazing, positive, uplifting experience. But Russian hackers were attempting to disrupt the voting to prevent Ukraine from winning. The Italian police's cybersecurity department blocked several attacks on network infrastructure by the KillNet hacker group and its affiliate, Legion. In February, in the wake of Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, the European Broadcasting Union moved to exclude Russia from the contest, and they succeeded in excluding them. There were some Russian hackers who promised to hack the system. Didn't work. Didn't happen. And Ukraine won by a record number of popular votes. We are going to go out with that winning song from the Kalush Orchestra. Called Stefania, I believe. It's dedicated to the singer's mother. How appropriate. OTH@2600.com is our email address. Write us with any comments you have. Tune in 8 o'clock on YouTube for Overtime. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night. Stefania, mamo, mamo, Stefania, розквітає поле, а вона сивіє, заспіває. Подала, вона на мене знала, може більше і відсоламана. Ломаними дорогами прийду я завжди до тебе. Вона не розбудить, не будить. Мене в сині бурі забере бабулі з відтулі. Ніби вони кулі. Дуже добре знала мене, не була обманута. Як було дуже втомлена, гойдала мене в бах.
це немало, дитина, вона далі нерви тратить, я гуляв. Шлях би тебе трапив, ти все молода, мама на піку, якщо не ціню опіку, на піку, слабе мені копіку, запрошайте піку, цю піку, я пи-па-піку. Своєї любові.
WBAI in New York, I'm Linda Perry thanking new BAI buddies.